Welcome, my friends, to another episode of Shoot First, Ask Questions Later. Today, we are joined by Rabbi Mark Glass, and we are going to be exploring a really fundamental tshuva in Minchas Asher from Rav Asher Weiss. It's not the first time we're doing a tshuva from Rav Asher Weiss, and this is certainly one that one needs to know. In fact, Rabbi Glass, when you recommended that we do this tshuva together, I even took out my Minchas Asher. I annotated it and underlined it many years back. And what is this important topic? The topic is, if I am machmir, if I am stringent for a certain halachic position, can I use a Jew who adopts a more makelian position as my, quote, Shabbos guy to do that which I adopt a stringent opinion not to do? This is a very juicy topic, has very wide implications from Shabbos to many areas of halacha, and I'm very excited to jump into this with you momentarily. So first of all, Rabbi Mark Glass, a native of Manchester, England, as you'll soon hear, has been the rabbi at Congregation Beth Israel Abraham and Vilner, BIAV for short, since August 2020. He received his BA in philosophy and MA in Jewish philosophy and smicha at Yeshiva University and spent over 2 years learning at Yeshiva HaKotel in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Glass served as the rabbinic intern at Congregation Ahavas Achim in Highland Park, New Jersey. He was the rabbi of the Adam Street Shul in Newton, Massachusetts from 2017 to 2020 and was a Judaic studies teacher at Maimonides in both the middle school and the high school. And something that we're not going to explore today, but both Rabbi Glass and I have a mutual interest in Pokemon and particularly the halachic implications of it. But we'll have to save that maybe for a future episode. So Rabbi Glass, let's understand I know I already basically gave away what the Shaila is, but maybe you can elaborate on what the question is the Minchas Asher is dealing with in particular, and what drew you to this personally.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much for having me on this podcast. I'm really excited. I've listened to a few episodes already, and I'm very excited to be a part of it. So what drew me to the question of the Minchas Asher, a friend and I, we have a chavruta every week, Josh Schwartz, and we wanted to learn some tshuva of Rav Asher Weiss, and we were just casually perusing the contents to see if there was a particular tshuva that drew our interest. And as I came across the question Rav Asher Weiss raises in this tshuva, it sparked a memory. It suddenly brought me back to my childhood, because what Rav Asher Weiss is explicitly addressing is whether someone who is stringent to not open soda bottles on Shabbat, whether they can ask someone else to open the new soda bottles that have yet to be opened, so opening is going to break the cap. Can you ask someone who's not stringent about that particular matter to do it for you? And this reminded me of growing up. So my parents live across the road from a shul. As per, all good Jews, that's not the shul they actually go to. They go to a different shul. But for Mincha Maariv during the week, Friday nights, and often Shalosh Shidduchim too, I would go with my father to that shul. And I just remember, it's a Shalosh Shidduchim, and the rabbi of the shul, turns to my dad, hands him a soda bottle and asks, can you please open that for me? And he would do that to other people too. And my dad would just be absolutely struck and confused, because it's almost like, if it's a problem, why are you asking me to do it? Right? And even if it is a chumra, even if it is a stringency, why don't you think I would be interested in knowing why that's an issue too? And so it brought back this memory. And that's kind of what drove me to read this tshuva of Rav Asher Weiss. But the truth is that as Rav Asher Weiss goes through the beats of this tshuva, it really started then to a certain extent open a Pandora's box of what is a greater question.
Or Pandora's Pandora soda bottle.
Yes, that
was a terrible rabbinic joke.
It cracked open the cap of the Pandora's soda bottle. But it really starts to, I think, raise. And admittedly, there are probably other teshuvot and other svarim that deal with this topic in a far greater to a far greater extent. But it really started to raise for me and give me a foundation for exploring what is a central question, which is, what I would say is the distinction between when someone is being machmir, when someone is being stringent, or when someone is being makel, when someone is being lenient, versus what we might just say is elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. You know, both of these are equally correct interpretations, and there's not much to split the two of them. And the reason, I'll just kind of say, the reason this is so interesting a topic to explore for me, it's something I've been speaking about a lot of, thinking about a lot over the past few months, because in my shul, so we are in Kansas City, we're talking just a couple of days after the Super Bowl, so it's a very joyous time to be in Kansas City, and it's
who won the Super Bowl? Was you guys?
Yeah, you know, if you were around here, you would see the parades and the fanfare and the glory. Someone tried to convince me to say halal yesterday in shul, and I was like, that's a little too far.
I mean, I should clarify, it's not that I'm too frum to watch the Super Bowl. It's just that I'd rather be watching Lord of the Rings Extended Edition rather than that. But okay, mazel tov to you guys. If, assuming you hold that sports is mutter, can I give you a mazel tov? I hold it's usser and you hold it's mutter.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's a glorious time to be in Kansas. But we are the only, right, what I would call full-service Orthodox shul for hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of miles. And what that means is that, especially during the week, we have a very, and I would say truly diverse crowd of people coming from Mincha Ma'ariv. And during the past few months, I've been talking about Hilchot Shabbat, right? And I've been talking about some of these classic questions of, you know, using soap, using toothpaste, toothbrush, all of these various things. But when I'm looking, you know, between Mincha Ma'ariv at the attendees in shul, there are the members of my shul. But there's also Chabad Rabbonim, who, you know, during on Shabbos, they have their own places, but they come to my shul. And we also have, I kid you not, 6, 7, 8 sometimes guys from Lakewood, Muncie. They're here for real estate. They're here for healthcare. And so I'm kind of looking around a room. And as I am sharing, for instance, a perspective of Rav Shechter, and as a good YU boy, right? Rav Shechter says this, and it's, you know, and I'm kind of not advocating on behalf of that position of Rav Shechter, but I'm conscious of the fact that, right, perhaps to the ears of some of the people who are not part of the kind of the quote-unquote YU community, it's either going to sound like a kula or a chumra. And I've been struggling with, right, is this advocating a hyper-stringency or a hyper-leniency, or is it no? Right, these different kind of sub-communities, right, we all have our different perspectives, but it's not that they can be compared to one another in this kind of hierarchy of which is superior, which is more stringent, which seems to be a little bit too lenient. And so as Rav Osher Weiss, turning now to the tshuva itself, as he's grappling with the question of, right, can you ask someone to open soda bottles for you on Shabbat when you yourself are stringent? Interestingly, he actually frames the question as it's asa, right? Sheladati asor liftoach. It's forbidden.
Yeah, I believe in another tshuva, he actually... Oh, you were going to say he addresses it. He has a separate tshuva on that topic, which he says, I think it's an issue of creating a kli as well as some other problems that come along the way.
So, yes. So it's funny because I didn't actually read those teshuvot because, again, not pick one from not gotten to them yet or less interested in the topic. But yeah, so actually he does kind of reference later in this same volume, he will address the... He addresses that issue, but already kind of the questioner knows this is his opinion. But it's interesting that he frames it as, from his position, it's asa. But the person who is kind of opening the bottles is being makel, is being lenient, which automatically, again, introduces a certain level of, right, almost, and this is what's interesting to explore throughout the tshuva, right, what's the correct position and what's the alternative lenient position? But, you know, in expressing this, and I should also say, right, towards the end of the tshuva, after discussing at some length a variety of sources, he effectively turns around and says, very few of these sources are fundamentally relevant to the question at hand, which is fine because I am less interested in the answer to the soda bottle opening question, and more interested in the sources he raises and the ideas he raises in trying to answer this question. And so he begins by drawing attention to a few areas of halacha, and the most notable is the Shulchan Aruch's codification of an idea already found in the Gemara. And again, Rav Osher Weiss discusses at length and debates the mechanics behind this. But someone who has accepted Shabbat early, and what is clear from this example and the next one that Rav Oschelweiss discusses, there's no principled reason, right? It's purely a practical consideration, right? It's the summertime, right? You've brought in Shabbat early. Can you ask someone else who's yet to bring in Shabbat to do malacha for you? The example I always think of is, right, I've got home from shul in the summer, my across-the-road neighbor who's a member of my shul but hasn't gone to shul on Friday night, right? So I see, oh, he's not yet accepted Shabbat. If I forgot to close my garage or garage, depending on your accent, but if I realized I've yet to close it, Can I knock on his door and be like, hey Danny, can you close the garage for me? And Shulchan Aruch says yes, right? You can ask someone who's not yet accepted Shabbat to do malacha for you.
Well, I feel like you open up another Pandora's box there, because you know you described your community as the sole communal Orthodox shul. So if your shul decides to daven earlier, it raises a bit of a shaila if the people who didn't attend automatically get dragged along with you. But I don't want to go too far afield on that one.
Just to address that in one moment, right? We also don't have the luxury of having kind of the Zman. A lot of shuls also have the Zman minion, but we do have the tacit acceptance that there are certain people who it's inconvenient for them to, you know, bring in Shabbat early. And so they are still, right, they're still going to wait until a little later. But yeah, it's a good point to raise. But broadly speaking, the idea, right? If someone's yet to accept Shabbat, or to put it another way, someone has accepted Shabbat early, they can ask someone who's yet to accept Shabbat to do malacha for them. And then the Rama quotes the flip side example, which is, and again, it's clear it's not a principle to reason, because the Rama says explicitly, essentially, Shalosh Shadus has gone on longer, right? You're eating your meal, you're enjoying your meal, right? Can you turn around to someone who has made Havdalah, who's brought out Shabbat, to essentially light a few extra candles for you? And again, the Rama says, yes, you can. And these examples, and how helpful they are for Rav Oschelweiss's question, but it sets up this idea that, right, there are times when something can be completely mutter for one person, completely osa for another person, and both states can be true in different people. Rav Oschelweiss brings a couple of other interesting examples I won't mention of further extensions of that idea, but here it's not stringency versus leniency, it's just objective halachic obligation. And that's what makes, I think, the next example Rav Oschelweiss uses the kicker. And he himself draws a contrast between this and some of the other examples, which is the somewhat well-known practice among the Hasidei Ashkenaz to observe 2 days of Yom Kippur. Because of the notion of Sveika de Yoma, our calendrical confusion, right? So always in Chutz La'aretz, right, we observe 2 days of all the Chagim. Obviously, the exception being Yom Kippur, but theoretically, the same should apply to Yom Kippur. We're just not going to expect that of people. But there was this practice, and very clearly a pious practice, of people to observe 2 days of Yom Kippur. So Rav Oschelweiss notes, the Torah quoting the Rosh, you had strong views on this in general, right, that if you are observing your second day of Yom Kippur, you can't ask people to perform melacha for you. Right? You can't turn around on your second day of Yom Kippur and ask someone to light a candle or turn on the light. Now, here, it seems to be a similar situation to the Shabbat situation. And again, the Lavush has a lot to say on this, and Rav Oschelweiss passes all of these various commentary by the Lavush. But ultimately, what Rav Oschelweiss settles on, and at least the way I would, you know, double down and explain it, is that here, yes, someone is doing a midat chasidut, someone is doing a pious practice, but it's almost like they are taking a principled stand. And their actions, right, the fact that they are saying, I am treating it as though it's the second day of Yom Kippur, right, Rav Oschelweiss, right, lefi hanhago, hanhagato, right, their own kind of actions, their own practice, right, it implies that their fellow should also be observing the second day of Yom Kippur. And this, for me, starts to raise this really, really interesting notion of the chumrah, or even potentially the kula, as a principled stand, right? Some things people do, right, bedavka, right? And really, they are doing it that way because they think everyone else should be doing it that way. But they don't necessarily demand it of other people. They don't necessarily expect it of other people, but their reason for following Chumrah X or even for following Kula Y is because, right, I think of like half the Rav Soloveitchik Chumrah kind of fall under this, right? It's inappropriate to say Baruch Hu Baruch Shema. Like, that's a principled stand. It wasn't just a Kula that it's annoying to have to, you know, say two different things during Chazarat Hashatz for every bracha, right? It was a principled stand. And this idea emerges for Rav Asher Weiss from the 2 days of Yom Kippur contrast to all of these other areas where it's practical considerations. You've started Shabbat early, or you're keeping Shabbat going purely for your own convenience. There's no principled stand there. Whereas here, you're keeping 2 days of Yom Kippur because maybe even your desire to be pious, to you know, is itself a principled stand that implies something about how you think everyone else should be acting.
Right. And I wonder if another way to frame it, not a contradiction to what you're suggesting, is the principle of Tarti Desasri. I mean, we just talked about Erev Shabbos, Friday Minyanim, about internal contradictions. It's not inherently a contradiction for me to accept Shabbos early while someone else does not. But it is logically inconsistent for me to say this is Yom Kippur right now and then ask someone to do Malacha on that day. Is it Yom Kippur for me or is it not? And I guess this probably also is connected to issues of lifnei iver lo sitei michshol, that if this is usher for me, you know, we didn't bring up this example, but this could be easily something that happens. If I'm makbid on Chalav Yisrael and I give a Hershey bar to someone who is not and they eat Chalav Stam, vis-a-vis myself, if I take a principled stand, I hold Chalav Yisrael is not a chumrah, but me'ikar hadin is that is something that needs to be done. I don't buy the other positions. So then am I violating lifnei iver by giving this guy a Hershey bar, which is Chalav Stam?
Yeah, I think perfectly encapsulates, from another frame of reference, the exact issue that I do think Rav Asher Weiss is also building to, though he doesn't frame it that way, which is this notion of what are your actions and what are the other person's actions implying about almost halachic truth. Imply that big term klaxon you need for the podcast, but what is it implying about, right, how things should be? Again, when I just accept Shabbos in early, right, I'm not saying anything normative about how Shabbat should be lived. I'm accepting Shabbos in early because it makes for a nicer Shabbos with the family. Someone else is waiting until the very last minute because for them, they have their considerations, their reasons. Right? Whereas with the Yom Kippur example and some of the other examples, you know, I'll turn to in a second, right, Rav Asher Weiss that he brings, right, some of these examples really do seem to imply, I think something is correct. I think this is truly the correct path. And for someone else, right, they really should be doing what they're doing. But because they're not, mm-hmm. That's wrong. And this, I think, really also grasps part of my broader thinking of different communities, which is when you have different communities who observe certain standards and certain practices. To use another example, Rav Asher Weiss doesn't get into, but right, the question of using an Erev. So without getting into, obviously, that another Pandora's box. So again, there is, and it's very complicated, and I don't really understand it. But there is it. But you know, many in the Chabad world are hesitant to use an Erev without a great need, at least certain Erevin. Whereas, and contrast that with the general, I would say, the more Mishnah Brura influenced, let's be machmir, because we are afraid all the details might not have been correctly done. And I think there's two very different reasons, right? And this is kind of already getting towards Rav Asher Weiss's passing of all of this, right? When a Chabad rabbi, right, doesn't want to use the Erev, it's not necessarily a judgment about the quality of the Erev or about the rest of the Jews using it. It's a communal belief. It's a communal stringency, right? That they are kind of observed. Stringency is now the wrong word based on what I've been saying, but it's a communal perspective that does not necessarily need to imply everyone else should be doing it too, because it could just be Elu ve'elu. Whereas when a member of, let's say, the modern Orthodox community is deciding to be frommer than everyone else and refusing to carry in the Eruv, right, they are then implying, right, the Eruv isn't actually good. And then for them to then turn around and ask someone, a friend of mine was telling me recently about this in his community, of someone who refuses to use the Eruv, but asked him to carry something instead. And it's like, that doesn't work, right? You're not using the Eruv. You don't believe the Eruv is good. You can't then have me carry for you, as opposed to someone just has a tradition, for want of a better expression, of not using community Eruvin because it doesn't fit their entire communal standards.
Right. And this could also, I think I've heard that this could be a point of tension. I don't know if it was B'nai B'rak. I don't want to, you know, scratch that. I don't want to cast aspersions on anywhere. But I heard where the husband in the family would be machbid, that the heir was not valid, and then the wife would wind up pushing the stroller. So, you know, here I am being machmir now, and it's going to be on someone else's account. And if I really believe that it's problematic, then why is my wife doing it? I guess you could always reference her Moshe's tshuva about wearing a sheitel and how the rabbi was machbid on it, the shul was machbid, and he's like, okay, but your wife has what to rely on, so don't tell your wife what to do. It's interesting, especially not just in a community, but within a family itself, when there could be one spouse who wants to adopt a more machmir position. This is a classic issue in our family kitchen. I think my wife leans more stringently than I do on certain things. So how do we resolve that? You know, I don't want to make something trafe in her mind. So that's, you know, that runs a complication as well. So anyway, so I think one other point that's interesting to distinguish is, how do we, and I guess this is just up to the individual perhaps, how do we distinguish when something is an issue because I'm machmir versus I believe the quote machmir position is actually just me ikar hadin, is actually just principally correct, and that lenient position is just, it's not a leniency, it's just wrong. And, you know, can I, Moshe Kurtz, make an evaluation like that? Does a posik make an evaluation like that? And what if another posik disagrees with him? So, you know, who is determining what actually is chumra, what is mikra din?
So that's kind of the perfect segue to what I would say is the back end of the tshuva, where Rav Osher Weiss brings two other examples. The first example is the actual specific example we need not get into, but when it comes to, you know, bishul on Shabbat, the prohibition of cooking and issues related to reheating food on Shabbat, where Sfardim and Ashkenazim have different opinions on what you can and can't do. And he points out, right, the poskim have addressed this question before, right? Can I, as an Ashkenazi, ask a Sephardi to do something for me on Shabbat, right? Because for them, it's permitted, but for me, it's prohibited, right? Or vice versa. And he contrasts this with the whole question over when is Shabbat out, right? Following Rabbeinu Tam versus following kind of the Gaonim in exactly how we define when it's been Seta Kochavim, when three stars have emerged and Shabbat is out. And he admittedly, with the second example, Rav Osher Weiss himself ties himself in a couple of knots, trying to process many different ways someone could subscribe to Rabbeinu Tam. But he draws a distinction between, right, the Sfardi Ashkenazi example, where obviously an Ashkenazi cannot turn to a Sfardi and ask them to do something on Shabbat that's legitimate for the Sephardi but not for the Ashkenazi, because fundamentally, right, Sephardim are, and this for me is such a key idea, Sephardim are essentially bound by, right, by the Shulchan Aruch, they are bound by the Sephardi tradition of Psak. And what specifically
you say Sephardi,
makes,
I mean, you got Taimonim following the Rambam and everything, so you got to acknowledge the diversity within the Sephardi.
Yes. if we did have a Pandora's box klaxon, this would be, you know, it would just be sirens all through the podcast. But yes, you know, but without getting too much into all of those ideas, the simple fact is, right, Sephardim have a certain tradition of Psak, and that's what makes it fundamentally legitimate for them to do certain things on Shabbat. Ashkenazim have a very different tradition of Psak, and that makes it fundamentally prohibited, again, or vice versa, right? This is, you know, and for me, this is the ultimate example of the Elu ve'Elu, right? No one truthfully, right, for all that we make jokes and for all that, you know, no, Sephardim don't actually turn around to Ashkenazim and genuinely believe at least I would say thoughtful Tzvanim and Ashkenazim, don't turn to each other and are like, you are doing something wrong by following the position of Rav Avadia Yosef, or you are doing something wrong by following the Chafetz Chaim, right? No, like, we accept these two communities are inherently legitimate, and the fact that they do these things are both derivations of legitimate kind of traditions of Psak and how to decide questions. Contrast this with the Rabbeinu Tam example. And again, Rav Asher Weiss does pass many, many different ways to think of someone observing Rabbeinu Tam. But here it's a stringency. And even though someone might acknowledge it's a stringency, there is almost a principled stand being taken in, right? In contrast to the example earlier where the Ramah is, your Shalosh is just going on longer, but you're not intentionally attempting to delay Shabbat to a certain time. You're just not trying to bring it out yet. But someone else already has. In contrast here, if you're following a Rabbeinu Tam, right, you are taking kind of a principled stand in, right, Shabbos isn't actually out yet. And again, to turn to someone and then insist, you must therefore, you know, please do malacha for me, right, makes no sense because you've taken this principled stand. And Rav Asher Weiss does kind of, you know, quote then Minchat Shlomo, which is the fundamental question is, right, is someone observing a chumra because they believe it to be me'ikah hadin? They believe it to be the true understanding of the topic, right? Which again, for me, is almost like the principled stand. Right. They have, you know, they have surveyed. Right. Like and this is the correct opinion versus right. They're just trying to do a chumrah kind of blindly because they think it's fun. Quickly, I would say, turning to the end of Rav Asher Weiss's tshuva, he does introduce an entirely additional component here, which is fascinating, which is to claim that even if one wants to argue that usually someone who is stringent in a given matter, when it comes to the soda bottle opening example, you could ask, or at least as Rav Asher Weiss says, like if soda bottles have been opened on Shabbat, you can then use the soda bottles. Is he then introduces the fact that there are new questions and there are old questions, right? There are some questions where there is now a strong, right? We've been asking these questions for hundreds, if not thousands of years, and there is very, very clear opinions on, you know, the various sides of the issue versus a lot of these modern Hilchot Shabbat questions where we've only been asking them for 10, 20, 30, maybe at most 100 years. And in those questions, right, there's far more latitude in, right, recognizing what we might call true stringency as opposed to principled stringency. That's terrible terminology, but, you know, conveys the idea, right? There's far more latitude in recognizing almost also the legitimacy of other opinions. This is not a settled issue, right? I have decided that I am going to follow opinion X, but it's far more open to interpretation. And for me, I think what's so key is this idea that, right, again, the Elu ve'elu, right? Rav Asher Weiss's tshuva really gives, I think, strong foundations for the idea that sometimes someone is observing X, and that is a legitimate, you know, understanding within their community. And the fact that it leans l'chumra or l'kula, the fact that it leans more stringent or more lenient, doesn't bring with it what I would say is almost a sense of judgment, which sometimes occurs now in kind of the Jewish community. Oh, the fact that you are being lenient implies you're being less serious. No, right? You are following a right tradition of Psak in a very specific direction, and that's what's leading you to your views.
So I would, you know, I had a debate with a colleague of ours. I don't know if he'd appreciate a shout out, so I'm not going to say B'Shem Umro. But he said, you know, when we look at our community, you're in the Modern Orthodox community, I'm in the Modern Orthodox community. So we were talking about whether we hold minyan is actually an obligation midrabanan, or whether, you know, we paskin, which Rav Asher actually holds, and that's a ma'ala ba'am, it's a nice thing. So he said, oh, pukhazi, you know, go out and see what everyone does. And I'm like, I don't think it's pshat. I mean, in communities where they struggle to get a daily minyan, that the pshat is that we happen to have adopted the psak of Rav Asher Weiss that we only hold that minyan is a maila ba'alma. I think it's just like, it was like lo hayid var me'olam. Like we never even had that discussion or that forethought. It's just that for some communities, unfortunately, minyan is not central enough. Now, Baruch Hashem, in our community, we're blessed. We have a 6:30 shacharis, 7:30 shacharis. We have regulars who are really holding down the fort. But for many, unfortunately, it's like just not even a thought on the radar. It's not even the question of one or the other. So
I think like that's an issue when determining, oh, we happen to adopt the Makel position. Are we actually many times adopting a Makel position, or are we just, well, I guess by default, we go for the lowest common denominator, and that defaults to the most lenient position. But one thing I just wanted to also, I just wanted to make sure we actually get the final psak, the maskana, in Rav Asher Weiss's tshuva. My understanding, and tell me if I have this clearly as we're approaching the end, is that he writes, he says, I will not directly, like in your case, ask someone to open up the bottle if I hold its usher. Again, I'm not sure, maybe Don Kefskos, maybe the rabbi in your scenario just like was too weak to open up the bottle. He needs someone stronger to do it. I don't know. But he says, but if it's already done, then I will drink from it. Why? So then it's really just a question of Maisa Shabbos. If someone does a malach on Shabbos, can you benefit from it? And here, there's just like a technicality. There's a quirk that here, the malacha didn't change. It didn't fundamentally change the, you didn't cook the drink. You didn't make the drink on Shabbos. You just removed the cap that was in the way of you getting to the drink. Hasar samonea. So since you didn't actually change the actual guf, the actual beverage itself, so since it didn't change, I'm allowed to benefit from it. So that's like just a quirk. But, you know, if I hold, for instance, something is, well, I guess the interesting thing about Maisa Shabbos is that we generally paskin that as long as there's some lenient opinion, it's not Maisa Shabbos. So if I go, for instance, I guess we're talking about going to a Temani house where they can reheat liquids on Shabbos. Ein bishul acher bishul bedavar lach. So, you know, maybe I can't tell him to reheat the chalent put it back on a hot plate or something for me on Shabbos day, depending again on your chalent and consistency. Okay, fine. But once he already did it, he's relying on the Shita Sarambam. Okay, great. It's not Maisa Shabbos. Are there any other just practical considerations or broader philosophical takeaways you'd like to share with us in conclusion? And also just make sure I actually understood the Minchas Asher correctly.
Yeah, so I would say, right, you are right in, and I also had underlined the same thing, right? He does not ask people to open bottles, right? But he does rely on if someone has opened the bottle, that's fine. But I think part of what's driving it here is, again, this idea that he, and this is maybe what's interesting in terms of there are three different kind of paths that arch out from this tshuva, right? Two that go in the same direction are, right, to use the Sfardi Ashkenazi example again, right? You can't ask Sfardim to do things for you, but, right, if a Sfardi does something, it's inherently legitimate, right? And therefore, right, we're not going to be upset by, bothered by them doing something which is inherently legitimate for them, right? The second idea that branches out, which he relates to the opening of soda bottles, is that, it's a davar sheyesh bo machloket berura. Right, Bein Haposkim Zeh Mekel Vzeh Machmir, right? There's clear debate, right? Everything is kind of unsettled. And here, and I think this is kind of what Rav Asher Weiss is driving at, his choice to be Machmir is very much a, right? He's not trying to, and it's interesting because then he has a tshuva where he is weighing in, but he's not, it's almost like, right, he is very, very clear that people who don't observe the stringency are in the green. Right? That is fine. It's not an issue. It's not a problem. Right? The final kind of issue that branches out, which is, I think, the very different one, which is, and maybe when there is settled debate over what the positions are, right? If kind of the general Jewish world, you know, subscribes to such and such a view, and then someone is taking a principled stand one way or another, right, that is where your conduct, your own actions create this logical inconsistency. If you decide, you know, after hundreds and hundreds of years, you are going to be machmir and you are going to hold to Rabbeinu Tam's position, right? That's saying something about what you believe to be the halachic debate. And for me, I think, right, as well as bringing a lot of foundation to this whole question of diverse communities, where, again, in the modern Orthodox community, we might subscribe to a position of Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Shechter, Rav this, Rav that. But it's an elu ve'elu situation, right? For the Chabad rabbi, obviously he's never going to follow the position of Rav Shechter because, right, that's not part of his, you know, tradition of psak. But it's not, there is no hierarchy between the two observances. It's just, you know, elu ve'elu, it's two different divergent understandings of the same principle. In contrast, if someone is observing a taking a principled stand, right, that kind of is also implying something about everyone else, and therefore they can't do this logical inconsistency of asking other people to do things for them. But it also, you know, and I will say this, though, it's its own another Pandora's box, right? Sometimes in communities, when someone is machme to do something, I've heard Rav Schechter, I think, says something to the equivalent of Yuhara's spiritual arrogance is doing any chumrah, you know, the rabbi isn't doing in shul kind of thing. Like if the rabbi sits in certain places and you stand, right, you're basically trying to say, like, I'm from then the rabbi. And I do think that component is also present too, but these principle stands. But I think what's so crucial in all of this, and this is kind of what drew me, the broader idea is the clarity that comes from learning halacha, right? We live in a world, and again, I grew up in Manchester where this is even more prevalent, where you see chumrat left, right, and center, right? And often people just espouse these chumrat as though everyone should actually, almost in the truest sense, like everyone should be doing this. And then people get confused because they see other people doing things. And the clarity that actually comes from learning halacha, something that I love learning halacha because it's so, you know, we're not too far now from Pesach, right? Learning Hilchot Pesach is the perfect example of this. Like you learn Hilchot Pesach and you understand, right? This is a chumrah. This is something I actually need to take seriously. And it empowers you in both directions, right? When you know you have to do it, but you've learned why you have to do it, you know, there's an empowerment that comes from having learned that. But when you also have that clarity of realizing, okay, so-and-so does that, but you know what? It's not Me'ika Hadin. It's not ultimately what needs to be done. And that changes kind of the evaluation criteria of the various things you do. So for me, this tshuva of Rav Asher Weiss is less about opening bottles and more about opening Pandora's boxes into all of these various questions. And, you know, to a certain extent, everything I've said has been, you know, what could almost be the opening of, you know, myriad discussions that require so much more rigor and refinement to actually discuss. But it's this general idea of, right, the relationship between Chumrah and Kula on the one hand, and Eilu ve'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim on the other hand, as these kinds of twin evaluation criteria within our community, as we try to navigate serious halachic observance, we try to navigate, you know, having a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam and heeding his word, and at the same time, try to navigate the human factor of, right, sometimes wanting to ape what we see other people doing, or wanting to feel like we are perhaps, you know, doing things more seriously than those around us.
Wow. So I think, as you said, you've really opened up a huge Pandora's soda bottle for us today. If I could bring back my really terrible rabbi / dad humor, I've never figured out what the difference is between the two of them, but maybe Anus or Chal Isser. Rabbi Glass, thanks so much for really sharing this tshuva of Rav Asher. As you mentioned, it addresses really a myriad of many issues. I'm sure our listeners will have some feedback and further thoughts and ramifications of this discussion, and we certainly welcome it. And just letting our listeners know that Rabbi Glass is publishing in the Lair House and many other different kinds of forums now. You should go Google him, put him in the Google search engine, see what comes up. And there's many other ways that you can learn from his Torah. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. And wishing you continued hatzlacha in your Rabbanus.
I mean, thank you so much. This was wonderful kind of have this discussion. And again, I do look forward to the many, 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 hopefully many discussions that it kind of sprouts forth, because this is really just the opening of the Pandora's box or the Pandora's soda bottle, from which, you know, Mentos has been inserted in the soda bottle, and it will all just, you know, explode around us in a cloud of, you know, discussion.
Ah, oh, beautiful. Amen, amen.